Well, I'm Rodrigo, and I work in the University of São Paulo. And today I'm going to show to you some of the results of an ongoing project I'm doing with Alex and John Bjorkman. And at first I proposed to talk about specifically the non-isothermal effects on BE stars. And the former motivation for that is that we have realized that the non-isothermal effects have signatures that are detectable in, for example, the slope of the SED or the visibility. However, in the course of this study, we found out that we should discuss more carefully some more fundamental properties of the disk emission. So I hope to not disappoint you, but I should rename this talk as the discontinuum emission according to the VDD model. And this is the first step to understand physically the non-isothermal effects in the disk. And well, besides building the foundation to study the non-isothermal effects, there are some other motivations to study this continuum emission. Well, as a first motivation, I want to revisit the work from Waters, Cote, and Lammers that have derived for a large sample mass loss rates and also the density slope for with the IRAS observations, but given that the model they believe at that time. Now we have the VDD, a new paradigm, and it seems to be necessary now to revisit this kind of study in the light of the new model we have today. Another motivation is that we have an increasing database. By that time, he used only IRAS, and now we have Akari and Herschel and a lot of surveys that provide a lot of information, observational information we can use and do statistical work. And also, of course, we have now interferometry, which is great, and we can. And there's an increasing database too about interferometry. Well, and the last motivation is to understand how the physics of these loci curves that was presented by Alexis and Rivinius' work. Why do they have these loci curves? Represents the brightness distribution over the disk. And for a less dense model, they are all clustered, for example, and a high density model, they are spread out and separated. At the end of the talk, I hope you understand why is that. Well, and the key concept of this of the simple model at first, we produce it to understand the continuum emission is the concept of a pseudophotosphere. And we can understand the pseudophotosphere as actually it's actually a surface where the optical depth is close to the unit. And then we can define an effective radius which separates this optically thick region and a diffuse emitting region of the disk. Actually, this effective radius depends on wavelength, density, and disk inclination too. And I want to provide simple scaling relations that explain this dependence on these parameters. So these are my goals for now before the non-isothermal effects. Interpret the loci curves given a simple analytical model. Since it's always expensive to run realistic models such as HDUST we have just seen by Robert. And the basic assumption is to interpret the continuum emission of the disk as an optically thick part and a diffuse emission region. My assumptions are the VDD density model with a scale height, which is a power law. And I use an opacity, which was given actually also by use used also by Waters et al. And includes both bound free and free Gaunt factors. But I'd like to emphasize that this bound free Gaunt factor is based on an LTE approach. So this will be important later. And also, I assume that since the disk is geometrically thin, I can say the optical depth in any inclination angle of the disk goes as the secant of the inclination angle times the polar optical depth. So given this model, the VDD model, what is the functional shape of the effective radius? Well, it's just to set the optical depth equal to the unit, and then we have our first relation, scaling relation. We have an expression for the effective radius depending on inclination. It's generalized for inclinations. Okay, the edge on case is excluded, but we have the dependence on up to 75 degrees, it's okay, and density, and also wavelength. And since we know where is this point where we can separate the optical thick region and the diffuse emission, we can split the brightness profile into these regions. So we can say in the Rayleigh-Jeans limit, the optical thick region goes as the temperature structure in the inner part of the disk. And the other part goes, since it's optically thin, has this term here multiplied the optical depth outside the effective radius. If we integrate this expression, assuming an isothermal disk, which is the simplest case we can imagine, we can derive this expression for the flux, for a general inclination angle. And okay, it goes as the square of the effective radius, as we should expect. And from this expression, we can also derive the infrared excess and the SED slope. So now we want to know how good is this approximation, and how correct is to consider the disk as having this dual optical regime. Well, to check that, we have HDUST, which is a realistic radiative transfer code that Robert used, and so you know already the capabilities of this code, and it can produce images. So from these images produced by a realistic simulation, we can perform a kind of an elliptical photometry here to build up the loci curve. The loci curve actually is an integral definition of the brightness profile. They both carry the same physical information, so they are equivalent. So for me, it's clearer how I see better what's going on in the disk here. And here you can see from a realistic simulation that we can actually split into two regimes the brightness of the disk. And I can also measure from the simulation where the kink of this kink of the brightness profile occurs, and then find out where is the effective radius from the simulation. Well, my first question is the optical depth by that point really close to one? Okay, I checked it, and yes, it's very close to one, so our first assumptions seems to be correct. I've run some small grid of models, and it seems to be okay according to this test. Also, I have tested the assumption that the disk is geometrically thin, and it goes very well with the secant law. And I have tested also the scaling relations for this effective radius, for several densities and power law densities, also to exponent densities different too, and for some spectral types. And it roughly, it goes okay. So for such a simple model, I think we are getting what is important from the physics of the disk. So we could also compare our simple model predictions with infrared excess from the simulations, complete simulations of HDAST. And we see that especially longer than 5 microns, it goes very well. And shortward 5 microns, it departs. Here I have the curves for severe inclination, where the lower curves are the for 75 degrees inclination angle of the disk, and the upper curve is the polar case. So I see it departs more from the more the closest to edge-on case, but that's okay. The edge-on is not predicted, but up to 70 degrees, it's okay. And the green lines are my simple models, and the black lines are the HDAST results. So this departure under the 5 micron wavelength seems to show that the non-LTE effects are important, and there are hydrogen departure coefficients that are larger for, and the boundary part is dominated by a non-LTE effect because of the population levels of the hydrogen. Also, I have calculated the slope of the SED. So we can see a kind of an oscillatory behavior. And even if our fit is not perfect, qualitatively, it's good. So we are getting more or less right how the slope goes. And finally, we can interpret these curves, as I promised. Well, if we take a specific case, which is exactly what I've chosen before, for a scale height exponent 1.5 and a density exponent 3.5, I get these numbers. So the effective radius depends on density and lambda like this. And so I can estimate the side of the effective emitting region. And for these curves that are clustered together, they just don't have a clear sign of an effective emitting region. They are all made of diffuse emitting area. While when we have these separated curves, they are separated because they have different effective regions, emitting regions, and so they are composed by both optically thick region emitting and optically thin diffuse emitting light region. And so we can interpret that these curves have lower densities, or we are looking at shorter wavelengths, while these curves that are spread out, we have higher densities, so the optical depth of the disk will be more important, and we have optically thick region really in the disk, and it will be the effective area, emitting area of the disk. And here I have this sketch to show some simple cases and to stress out this a dual behavior of the disk. We have the brightness of the star, which as for simplicity I've chosen a uniform brightness, and then we have the optically thick part which goes as the temperature goes. So for an isothermal model it'll be flat, and for example power law temperature profile it'll be a power law here inside. And then I have the diffuse emitting part which goes as the temperature times the optical depth, the radial profile of the optical depth that goes down really fast. Well, we know from the simulations that the temperature of the disk isn't isothermal and neither only a power law. It's more complicated than that. But we can parameterize this curve, this temperature structure, in terms, for example, of the minimum temperature here and the isothermal temperature. And we can do that. We could do so a calibration from the HDAS models to describe the behavior of the temperature. And just to touch a little bit the non-isothermal issue, I have simulated also some models completely isothermal, and I in fact see that it is flat, the brightness profile here in the inner part, and when they are realistic, they have a slope, so they really go as the temperature gradient here. So my conclusions are, we could interpret the loci curves or the brightness profile of the disk in terms of a very simple model that proposes a dual optical regime, an optically thick and a diffuse emitting area. And we could provide good approximations and good scaling relations for the size of the this effective emitting area. And this can be used also, for example, for interferometry. This effective radius is actually what we measure with interferometers. So it can be used also in this kind of observations. And also we could describe very well the infrared continuum emission, at least longwards, at longer wavelengths, for longer than 5 microns. And okay, even if I couldn't explore in detail all the non-isothermal effects of the disk, I could show something. It's the first non-isothermal effect, and we see that the non-isothermality of the disk, in fact, will change the flux we are observing from this star. In the future, we want to parameterize the temperature radial profile using the B Atlas, which is a grid of models we are producing now. It's an ongoing project, but in a few months, I hope we can make it available. But the B Atlas will have a lot of more implications. But for this work we have, we can calibrate to the minimum temperature point and the isothermal temperature for several spectral types and densities. And we can also produce some hydrogen departure coefficients, so we can go for shorter wavelengths too, and our approximation could be better for shorter wavelengths. And then we can do statistical studies based on the huge database we have today. Thank you.
Speakers this morning that gave us such a whole host of interesting talks. So thank you very much.